And welcome to the Ashley Webster Experience. Joining us today, a special guest alongside Brian Solomon. He's always a special guest with us, but we really do have a special guest. Her name, and you probably recognize this name, Tommy Lauren. She's the conservative media firebrand, is how people like to label her. She's also a host on the Fox Nation. She does a gazillion things. She's massive on social media. She's a very, very outspoken conservative, but she has an amazing and a really amazing story of how she got to where she is now. And she's still very young. She's got so much ahead of her, and we're very lucky to have her in the studio. Tommy, welcome.
Thank you. That's quite the introduction. I love it when people say firebrand. It's like, what really is fire? I feel like that's a nice way to say controversial and a lot of people hate you.
Because
that's
like
too long for a headline, so it's firebrand.
Firebrand means you have every bit of confidence in what you're saying.
That is true.
Energy.
I have that.
And energy,
yeah.
Yes. You know, you got to have that these days. Okay, you're a young lady. You grew up in South Dakota, which is interesting. And they say rural South Dakota. To me, all of South Dakota
Yeah, there really
is
isn't a metropolis, so to speak, in South Dakota.
The big city.
I come from the second largest city, and that's about 70,000. So just to give you a
Where
concept.
Where is that? Out of interest.
Rapid City.
Oh,
so Mount
the
Rushmore.
Black Hills.
Yes, you know.
I lived in Montana. We used to go through South Dakota and North Dakota, for that matter. But
North Dakota isn't as fun.
No,
I mean, and I can say that because I've been to North Dakota. It's not as fun. They have oil, but that's about it.
Well, talking of fun, you grow up in South Dakota, but you end up going to school at UNLV. You go to the University of Las Vegas in the desert, casinos, crazy place. That must have been quite a transition for you.
Yeah, I think the most, I guess, biggest transition you could make from South Dakota is probably Las Vegas. Nevada. But that was why I wanted to do it. That's why I wanted it, because I didn't grow up in an area that's got extreme diversity.
Yeah.
You know, and people in South Dakota, we think a lot alike, and it's a great way to think. It's a great way to grow up. But I knew if I wanted to do what I wanted to do, and that is be in media and be in politics and do commentary, I need to be around people who think differently than I do.
And you knew that from a young age, that that's what you wanted to do.
I started at a very young age with a camcorder making cooking shows with Play-Doh. I mean, you name it. I was in front of the camera doing whatever I could do.
And your beliefs, your conservative beliefs, does that come from your upbringing?
It does. But, you know, people often ask me that. They think, well, you must have grown up in a very strict conservative home. That's really not the case. My parents are conservative. Most people in South Dakota are conservative.
Yeah.
But I think that's more of a product of the way we grew up, being hard work, work ethic, determination. You don't take anything from anybody. You give back what you can. It's just a very honest way to make a living in a lot of the flyover states. And I think that lends itself to conservatism. So that's how I grew up, always just appreciating the value of a dollar and the value of hard work.
It's interesting because I come from another country, but I've done a lot of political coverage in the United States for the last 30 years, and I've really enjoyed it. I find it fascinating, to be honest with you. It's almost an addiction for me. And this is before the age of Donald Trump and everything that we're seeing now. And generally, I've noticed it's the liberals that tend to be the loud, shout-you-down group. And I still think that's true today. But it's interesting to be on the conservative side, who tend to be the silent majority, frankly. And you mentioned flyover states, which is what makes me think of this, is that there's this big majority out there who have basic conservative ideas. But it's the coastal elites on the East Coast and the West Coast that seem to drive the engine, because they know better than us. And what's nice is what I say nice, but I think what is probably fair is on the conservative side now, we have people who make points, and like I use that expression, firebrand, but it's always been the left that shouted the loudest, and now there's some pushback, and you're part of that pushback.
You got to fight back. You know, I grew up in a way where we watched the nightly news. That was a staple in my household. Every night we'd watch the nightly news. Oftentimes we'd watch ABC. My parents liked to watch ABC. But there would be so many inconsistencies with the way I grew up and the way I was raised, especially when it came to things like gun culture.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in South Dakota, we might not know everything that you guys deal with on Wall Street. We might not know Hollywood very well, but there's one thing we understand. It's agriculture and it's gun culture. And the mainstream media would get it wrong time and time again, the way they characterize mass shootings or the way they characterize gun owners in general. I just saw a lot of issues with that. And I thought, there are so many people here in the middle who really don't have a voice because we don't have an outlet. We have our local news, but that's speaking to each other.
Mm-hmm.
We need to be able to find a way to break through on a national scale and say, this is what the people of middle America are thinking. Donald Trump understood that, and I believe that's why he won the presidency.
Well, you're now living in L.A. You're in the belly of the beast of the liberal world. Are you well received with what you're saying and what you represent?
Some places more than others, but I will tell you this. it's easy to remember the negative interactions I have than the confrontations, the things that make me feel nervous or unsafe. It's mm-hmm. easy to remember those things because they stick in your mind. But what I try to look at is the number of people that come up to me really on a weekly basis in a grocery store, out at a bar, in a mall, and say, I'm conservative too, and there's nobody who's conservative in California.
But do they
it's
do it
just
in a
us
hushed
too.
Voice?
They do it in a way. Yeah, it is. And that's unfortunate. That's yeah. what I want to change. But there are so many conservatives, they just don't feel like they have a place or a home. And they almost fall victim to this mob mentality. And they think that I must be liberal. I won't have any friends. Or at least I have to pretend that I'm a liberal. And I look at them and say, why don't you be proud of who you are? Your real friends and family are going to like you anyway. So you might as well just be honest with yourselves and others. And I think that some people are starting to do that.
But they whisper Donald Trump because Donald Trump and his supporters are looked at as racist, people who hate migrants, hate a lot of things about America. And it's simply not true. But that's why the polls were wrong. People wouldn't mm-hmm. admit to people taking polls that they were going to vote for Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. Same as in the UK. They wouldn't admit they were going to vote for Brexit, but they did.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of a strange thing. It's a common sense, but it's yeah. a strange thing. And it's a sad thing that people don't feel safe enough to say, yeah, I like Donald Trump. I think he's doing a great job. It's certainly with the economy. I may not agree with everything he does, but my God, he's getting things done, which so many politicians haven't before. But they're kind of reticent to say that.
They are, and I think there's a lot of misinformation as well. People hear Donald Trump, like you said, and they automatically think all these negative labels that people have placed on him. Mm. But they're misinformed as to everything he's doing for this country and what he really stands for and believes in. If they knew that, if they understood that, I think he'd have far more support and people would be proud to say they were Trump supporters. But this negative media campaign that's waged every night and day on other networks, that is the lazy viewer and the lazy voter who take that in mm-hmm. and that becomes gospel and fact to them.
Is it hard in your peer group? You're in your 20s, you're a millennial. That to me is unusual to have someone, it's not unusual to be conservative, but to be stridently so and not be afraid to speak up because many your age think otherwise.
No, they do. I actually was talking to a friend who lives in the Potomac area and in D.C.,
yeah.
a very affluent area. But she has kids and she said, I don't even know how to raise kids here because they come home from school at 5 and 6 years old and they're already being taught things about how Donald Trump's horrible. They're already being taught yeah. liberal policy. There was one kid who said his hero was Donald Trump and the rest of the parents ridiculed the child. That's what we're up against.
Yeah.
I'm only 26, but it wasn't that bad when I was in school.
No.
It's so much worse now.
Well, what you said, Ashley, yeah. about, you know, having to hide, you know, your feelings and not tell people that you're conservative or you like Trump. To me, I just feel like the fact that people have to hide what they think and what they believe is the most un-American way to live.
Of course. But
right?
that's the world we're in right now.
We're regressing.
The aggression from the left.
Yeah.
Look what goes on college campuses.
Yeah.
You know, God forbid you get a conservative speaker. They have to call in security or cancel yeah. the event.
Or you get punched in the face.
Exactly, which we've seen. And, yeah. you know, if there's ever a place for free speech, it should be college campuses. But that is the world we live in, and it's sad.
Well, they've made it into a moral – we talked about this morning. They make it into some kind of a moral high ground that they can stand on. And they think that intimidating conservatives and Trump supporters, labeling them, shouting them down, they think that that is their moral and ethical duty to do that because we've been demonized and put into such a corner in a box that they think they can say anything to us because, well, we are. We are racist. We are deplorable. We are bigots. So we have to attack those people. We have to run them out of town.
Right.
That's what they think. And we've got, like we talked about this morning, we've got elected leaders who are not only just implying it, they're calling for it directly.
Yeah.
That's a problem.
It is a problem. You're absolutely right. And, you know, in your position, you're obviously on social media. You've got a gazillion followers. Do you ever get threats? Because we hear about that. I know you had an incident in Minnesota, Minneapolis,
yeah.
where you were at a restaurant and someone threw water on you and just because you were there.
Yeah, I was there with my parents at brunch.
And
then they proceeded to yell, F me, through the whole place. And then the funny part, I was asked to leave. They threw water on me, on my parents, and then they come and they're like, yeah, we're going to have to ask you to leave. I'm like, first of all, I don't want to be here. I'm going to leave. But just out of curiosity, what made you think that I'm the problem of this?
Yeah, exactly.
But, you know, at the end of the day, yes, I've had incidents. I've had my fair trips to the police department to file reports. That has been, unfortunately, that has been at least a monthly routine for me, having to worry about this, that, or the other. But I'm not going to live in fear from it. People say, oh, well, you know, don't, especially when I talk about rappers, I often get messages from conservatives.
Yeah, you've had some battles in the past.
Yeah, which is weird for a conservative. Sometimes you don't think we enter that world. I enter that world, and it makes them uncomfortable. They don't like that I have invaded their world. Mm. And so they come after me, and I have people all the time say, you know, I just don't mess with them. Don't say anything to them because their fans are vicious. They'll come find you. So that's what I'm going to do.
This is America.
Yeah, I'm going to stop talking about things you don't want me to talk about because you're going to intimidate me. No, I'm sorry. I can fight my own battles.
What's annoying about
this,
Tommy, is that, you know, I don't agree with them, but I'm not going to threaten them. I hear what they say, but I don't agree with it. But I don't respond with violence, which is what is happening in today's world, that those that don't agree with you not only just disagree, they want to do you harm.
Yeah, no, it's become that because they don't have ideas that can speak for themselves. And a lot of times, even if you are – so I respect a liberal who is an educated liberal.
Right.
That's actually – sounds like an oxymoron, and in most cases, it is. But – I respect liberals who are just have a conviction of they're a liberal and they believe that the climate change Armageddon is coming. I can respect you if you have your set of facts and you want to debate it. I might disagree with you, but I can respect you. But the problem is that so many leftists now, they don't really have any facts or anything. They just hate Donald Trump and they hate Trump supporters. And that is their argument. And if you like Donald Trump or you're a Trump supporter or you're a conservative, then the only thing that they can do to come at you is to threaten you because they can't threaten you on your ideas. They're not threatening your idea of tax reform. They're not threatening you on your immigration policy. They're threatening you because they don't like who you voted for.
Yeah, for just being you and having an opinion.
Yeah, and with Trump, it's always the, oh, I don't like his style. I don't like the way he speaks. But it seems like, especially in these trade negotiations or the negotiations with North Korea, his personality and his style has been working. You know, he's shown that, hey, I'm a tough negotiator. I'm a strong talker.
And he's unconventional, which is a good thing. Puts him off kilter.
Yeah. If anything, that gives him the advantage, it seems like. See, that's the thing. People are criticizing the way his style, but not the outcome. Right.
Well, yeah, so he's not presidential. Who's to say what's presidential and what's not?
Yeah.
We had someone who seemed very presidential for 8 years, and what did it get our country? Nothing. So I'll take Donald Trump, and I'll take his unconventional style. But the thing is, people talking about this, they're the same kind of people who will say, oh, well, he's not presidential. And then they'll go on Twitter, and they'll say the nastiest, most disgusting things to me and other conservatives. But they speak that way. They speak directly. They speak honestly and authentically. So you'd think that they would look at someone like Donald Trump and say, I can relate to that because I'm not putting the fluff behind it. I'm not trying to put a bow on it. This is who he is. This is how he talks.
It's true.
Get over it.
You know, you're in Southern California. I lived in Southern California for 7-8 years.
Why did you leave? Besides
yes,
the taxes and
taxes
the liberals.
Taxes and the liberals. Other than that, it was great. The weather
was
beautiful.
To New York, which was much better.
I went from England to California, and there was this great ball of something in the sky. It was called the sun, I found out later, and it was absolutely beautiful. Of course, a big issue, immigration. I wanted to talk to you about that because I also lived in Yuma, Arizona, right down on the border there, and would do many stories with the Border Patrol. And I got there just after they put the wall up in that particular section. And I'll tell you, people who lived in Yuma said it made a huge difference. We didn't get swarms of people walking down the street on a regular basis. It actually slowed down and in some cases stopped these illegal immigrants just kind of waltzing their way into the country. Now, I know you've been down to the border quite a bit. But you're in a state, California, a sanctuary state, where everyone believes, yes, come on down. We'll set you up. You can get on the benefit system. It's just free reign. A shameless attempt to get more votes, by the way. That's what it boils down to. But President Trump calls it a national emergency, and I agree with him. And what do you say?
It's a crisis. It's beyond a national emergency. It's a crisis. And, you know, I wish he would have go even further. I know he's giving them a year. That's great. We don't just need to stop the drugs. We need to stop the people. These people are coming, and people don't realize the game that they are playing. They are coming over here with their families, with children, whether they're their children or not. Sometimes that's not even the case, but they're coming over here. They know full well that the detention centers can't hold them.
Right.
And they know their rights because they've been briefed on what their rights are. Why we give them rights, I still don't understand, but they're briefed on that. They know exactly what they need to say and what they need to do. So they come over here, and they know there are not enough beds. The Democrats, by the way, they want to reduce the number of beds. Mm-hmm. Imagine that.
Of course.
And then they have to release them because they can't detain them. There's no beds. So they release them, and usually the court proceedings take about 5 years. So they get a notice to appear. How many do you think show up? Less than 3%. So what do? They go into the country. They live as illegal immigrants. They have 3, 4, 5 kids who are now their anchor babies, and then now you can't deport them. So we have a crisis in this country. We already have somewhere between 11 and 22 million illegals in this country, probably far more. How many more million can we take?
Well, it's annoying for someone like myself who went through the whole process as part of a family. We did it legally. It took 3 years, went through all sorts of hoops, medical tests, and very deep background testing, by the way, to go through all of that and then be told, you know what, you could have just walked into the country. Mm-hmm. Why bother? Mm-hmm. And I also think that the fact that you have these sanctuary cities and states, it's just a massive invitation for people to break the law. I can't understand the logic. You know, listen, there's a process in place. There is a way to do this. But to just simply ignore what the law is and walk across or climb over the border and then expect these things to be handed to you and just to take off into the country and get lost really, really upsets me.
Of course it does. It should upset every legal immigrant that does it the right way. And I can't imagine what it's like to be a border agent. I just saw this morning on Fox and Friends that they're not able to even fill the positions for border agents. Yeah. Is becoming worse and worse, because who wants to do that job? Who wants to do that job? It's like trying to drain a bathtub, but you leave the water. Can't do it.
And, and these legal immigrants and these horrible stories, you know, some, you know, commit murder and often, or whatever crime it is, they get deported. They're back again, mm-hmm. sometimes multiple times, deported 5, 6, 7 times to come back and commit more crimes. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's got to be a way to stop this.
And this is the way I think we can appeal to those who might not generally be on our side of the immigration issue. Mm-hmm. And this is what I try to tell people in California all the time. When these illegal immigrants are coming in, they're not going to Beverly Hills. They're going to Compton. They're going to Inglewood. They're going to already underserved communities and largely minority communities. Mm. That's where they're going. These communities are already underserved. Their schools are already overburdened. They already have issues. And now you've got illegals who are coming in who are using those resources. They're going to school. They don't speak English. And so now all of your kids that are in these inner cities and these communities that are already underserved, now they're being burdened by people that have no legal right to be in this country. Mm. That doesn't fire these people up. I don't know what does. You want to help inner cities, you're going to have to stop the flow of illegal immigrants, because not only are they going to come in and take your jobs, they're going to be in your schools, they're going to be in your bus stations, they're going to be...
Well, putting a strain on the infrastructure.
The whole thing, the police, and the crimes that they commit, they're going to be in those areas. They're not going to be where all these self-righteous Hollywood liberals behind a gated community in the Hollywood Hills or Beverly Hills.
Living
that's not where these illegals are going. They're not going to Nancy Pelosi's yard.
Well,
they're
can't because there's a big wall around
exactly.
It. Ironically. Yeah. Have you, by the way, I forgot to ask you, have you met with the president?
I have met him before. We've also spoken on the phone after the election, but you know, we don't have, I'm not as close as... As some people would think that I am. I'm not like calling up, hey, Don, how's it going? You know,
if he is reelected, maybe would you be interested in becoming more, perhaps getting involved in the administration?
You know, I guess.
Or do you
people
prefer
have asked
to be on the sideline and be a commentator?
I'd rather be a commentator, just because I think we also need to hold Trump accountable. I'm the first one to say, in order for us to fully support you in 2020, you need to build the wall.
Right.
You need to get things done, because all these other things that you're doing, they're great. But when you fill stadiums of people and they're chanting, build that wall, that's what we wanted. Yeah. That's what a lot of people voted for.
Well, do you think his efforts so far, he's done a lot to try to get it done. Do you think his efforts so far have been good to this point?
I was happy with the declaration of the state of emergency. Before that, I was a little upset because we need to, you know, trying to deal with the Democrats with the government shutdown. That was a disaster.
Mm-hmm.
I'm happy with the declaration. I'm happy with him saying that he would close the border. I think giving them a year is ridiculous. I think we need to say, and cutting the aid, I think, is a great thing. It's like, you want the United States help. Mm-hmm. Don't be sending thousands and thousands of people a day to come knock on our door or just walk right through
our
door.
It's not free money.
Yeah, so he needs to get tough. I think he is. He needs cooperation. I'm more disgusted with the rhinos that sit in Congress who campaigned on border security and then went there and did the exact opposite.
So rhino Republican in name only.
Yes.
So pretend Republicans.
Yes, so that bothers me more than anything else is that a lot of them campaigned on border security. I have our sole representative from my state of South Dakota voted against the declaration, saying, oh, I don't know, that's such a bad precedent. You know, then the liberals are going to take the reins and then they're going to do that. Well, newsflash to you, they're going to do that anyway.
Right.
They're going to come after our guns. They're going to come after our rights anyway. So
and let's not forget, sitting in South Dakota, you don't have to worry about the border so much on the southern border.
But let's not forget Molly Tibbetts, who was murdered in Iowa. Let's
Very
not forget,
point.
Border issues aren't just for border states, because they don't just stay in border states. They trickle all the way through this country.
How much do you blame the employers in this country who employ, perhaps knowingly, illegal aliens in order to pay lower wages? Do you think there should be bigger penalties for those people?
I absolutely do. And I think that a reason that a lot of these rhinos in Congress are so reticent to do anything is because they sure like getting the support from these big corporations that depend on that low-skill, low-wage labor. And that's disgusting to me because this country is hanging in the balance. We cannot take 10, 20 million more illegals in this country. We can't do it.
Mm-hmm. On the other issues, health care, I feel like the Republicans have blown that. The old repeal and replace just kind of went out of the window. Probably not going to be a main issue, at least from the GOP point of view in 2020, but I think the Democrats will try and hammer that home. It's been frustrating that the administration hasn't been able to get Obamacare out of the way and put in a system that's more equitable for everyone.
It's such a big hurdle, and I think it's so challenging. I think that the way that the far left is going, though, it's just everything's going to be free.
For all.
Yeah, universal. Yeah. I think that's a disaster. So Jerry Brown in California, he thought that was to do universal health care in California. He said that was too extreme. That's Moonbeam Jerry Brown said that was too extreme. Now we've got Greasy Gavin Newsom is like, no, make it all free and bring in the illegals.
Right.
So I think that's going to be a bad path.
Almost every single time Fox News conducts a poll on the top issues for voters, health care is always number one.
I know.
Right? So that's the number one issue that we're seeing. But we can't tackle it. And that I think if President Trump and the Republicans can get something done before 2020, that could be the X factor that gets a lot of independents on board.
Yeah, I think so too, but I think you deal with immigration first. Mm-hmm. People don't realize what a suck illegal immigrants are on our economy, our resources, everything else. We have to deal with the issues in this country, but I think first we have to stop the flow of that, because how do you take care of your own people when you've got millions more rushing your borders? We need to take care of that issue. I think we need to address health care. But right now, everything on my mind is the crisis at the border and stopping that, because that impacts us for generations to come. That's going to transform this country. Mm-hmm. And not only that, Republicans, if all these illegals come in and they have anchor babies and they live in the shadows, and then Democrats are going to start making way for them to be able to vote.
That's true.
They're already in California. They want driver's license for illegals. We have that. When you sign up for a driver's license, you get put on the voter rolls. And they say, oh, no, we stop that. Uh-huh. We stop them. Really?
No.
You do. I really don't trust California with that.
Before you go, Tommy, because I know you're rushing. We're so glad you could join us. Getting back to 2020, as a Republican, who would you like to see on the Democrat side come through? All of the ones so far that have announced pretty beatable. We have Howard Schultz now, who's kind of an independent guy.
Which they'll eat him alive. Who do I think it's going to be?
Yeah.
Kamala. I think it's going to be Kamala.
Right. Minority female, ticks a lot of boxes.
She has a San Francisco machine behind her.
Right, we'll have money.
That's a deadly machine. I think Kamala is going to be their nominee.
Is she a tough opponent?
I think she is in some regards. I think she appeals to certain places more than others. I think she's going to struggle in the Midwest.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll see. We'll see how that goes. I think she's going to be the nominee. I'm not scared of her. She's going to run on identity politics, which I think is going to fail. I think that Biden would be probably the one to beat. I think he would be difficult because he does appeal to those union voters and the people that Trump really won over. But I think it's going to be Kamala. She's going to use all the cards in her pocket, and she's going to be the nominee. And I can't wait to see the nicknames. I already call her Cammy, but I can't wait to see. Because I just like, you know, just got to.
President Trump
has got
a great nickname for everyone. Couple of things. Just want to make sure you're on the Fox Nation, the subscribing service.
Yes.
Online. You have first and final thoughts, which you do on there. You also have an interview show, right?
No interruption.
Which is great. And you also, I don't know where you get time to do all of this, you got a book coming out.
I do. July 2nd, Never Play Dead, How the Truth
Never
Makes
Play
You Unstoppable.
Dead. Sorry, I interrupted. What's
the title? No, that's fine. Never Play Dead, How the Truth Makes You Unstoppable.
And what's in the book?
Well, kind of like what it sounds like. But for me, I think the ability to stand up for yourself, no matter what side of the political spectrum you're on, is an important skill in life. And having the confidence in professional and personal aspects of your life is important. I've been able to find that at 26. I want to help other people do it, too. And I'm going to tell you how.
Very impressive young lady. Tommy Lauren, thank you so much for dropping by. Really appreciate
it. Thanks for having me. Got to get you guys out to the West Coast. We can help build the wall. Anytime. Brick by brick, we will build it.
Yeah, we'll be out there.
Slat by slat.
Brian's very expensive. I just want to say that. Thanks, everyone, for joining us. We'll see you back here next time.
Hi, everybody. It's Brian Kilmeade. I want you to join me weekdays at 9 a.m. East as we break down the biggest stories of the day with some of the biggest newsmakers and, of course, what you think.
Listen live or get the podcast now at BrianKilmeadeShow.com.